Anyway, let's get started. Route 616, your home for all fans Marvel main continuity. This is episode 44 of Route 616, and holy shit, we got everybody here this week.
Dan comes back for the bad weeks.
I do. Yeah. I do.
Dan, I'm not going to try to sell people on these comics being good.
My shoulders are sore from carrying you guys. I need the break.
Well, I hope you don't...
I'm like David De Gea, right? My shoulders just hurt all the time from carrying the team.
I'm not even mad. I'm not even mad. It's so true.
Oh, it's so true.
Oh, man. Oh. I hope nobody was too excited for this week, because this week peaks early with the first comic that we covered, but we'll get into that as we go along, of course.
What are the chances that anybody's been too excited about this podcast regardless?
Probably
ask
little.
Ask it for a friend.
I don't even think some weeks we're excited about it. So.
Well, this is one of them.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, no, I'm looking forward to shitting on these comics.
Oh, are we?
I am.
They're not boring. They're bad. And holy actively fuck. Bad generally makes for good listening. Like, the bad ones are the boring ones that are just kind of there.
Yeah.
Now that I've read them, I'm excited to talk about them. Yeah. When I was reading them.
I wasn't looking forward to reading them.
Yes.
But I'm looking forward to talking about them.
There's a lot to talk about today, actually, if I remember everything.
None
I
of it
to
having to do
about.
With comics.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Shall we talk about Ant-Man Quantumania?
No.
I mean, you're the only one that's seen it still, I think.
Well, you know what? I'm the only one who's not a Marvel fanboy. And I'm the only one who's actually seen half the crap they put on the screen. What is it with you two?
I'm behind. I'm
get out of the goddamn house for 5 minutes.
I'm not paying for Disney Plus.
I am, but I'm behind. I'm catching up.
And I'm too lazy to download them when I'm probably not going to like
you
them.
You watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 5 and Iron Fist Season 2 for me, and you will give it.
Yeah, okay. You know what? You got to go see a fucking counselor. Watching fucking... Oh,
Iron
God.
Fist Season 2. Like, what are you
watching
doing to yourself?
Iron Fist, after the first half hour Iron Fist, why would you continue?
I can see the justification for watching the first season just so that the team-up makes sense.
Take the nipple clips off, Ryan, okay? Stop torturing yourself.
I can get Daddy Ass to remove them for you.
Oh.
You probably haven't seen that from Rampage, have you?
I haven't. You also went robotic on my hand for a second. That was fun.
Oh, well, okay. Daddy Ass was going to see exactly how hard Daddy Magic's nipples were with literal scissors.
Oh.
Dan?
Yes, dear?
Bill, do you see Dan?
Yeah.
I don't.
Unfortunately.
What?
you're not showing up. It says recording continues smoothly. Live video will return. What? So I think your video is going to cut out in the recording, but it still says it's recording. I've never seen this before.
He's coming in fine to me. It's probably your internet.
You can see me?
Yeah.
Okay. You can hear me?
Yep.
Obviously. Can you hear me, Ryan?
Yeah, I hear you. I just don't see you.
Oh, okay, because...
Arguably, this is
no
better.
Lag.
But...
I'm getting no lag, no robotics, nothing for me.
Yeah.
Okay,
Ryan.
I guess we got to move forward. I mean, my stuff shows up, my bears show up fine, so I don't know what's going on.
It might even be recording him fine, and it's just not broadcasting it to your screen.
Oh, he's back. There you are. Okay, well...
Hi!
Well, a professional podcasting as always, folks. But anyway, we'll run through what we're covering this week, and then we might talk about them. We might not. We might carry on some more. We'll see. But anyways.
Remember, do not try this at home. We can't afford the competition.
Don't worry. If they make it through this week, then...
Yeah. Okay. Okay, Ryan, come on. Get with it.
We're going to start off with Fantastic Four number 33, and then swiftly move on to Tales to Astonish number 63, the A story, which is Giant Man story, of course. Then we have X-Men issue number 8, Daredevil number 5, which feels like forever since we've read a Daredevil. Tales to Astonish number 64.
It feels
64.
Like forever reading that Daredevil, so it's there.
The A Story of number 64 as well for Giant Man Story. And then Avengers issue number 10. So, I guess we'll jump right in and go with Fantastic Four number 33, which is titled Side by Side with Some Mariner. He's not
spoiled or not.
Yeah, that's true. Stan Lee is the writer, of course, with Jack Kirby on art, and inks are done by Chick Stone. Cover art is done by Jack Kirby. He's the only one credited on the site, at least. Artie Simic is the letterer, and October 1964 is the release date for this one. And this is a 20-page story. A week or two ago, these stories have started to... The full-length ones have started to go to 20 instead of 21 or 22 pages, so...
Yeah, they're getting more advertisement now.
They are.
Or at least they're prepping for it. I think at this point they're still using posters to fill that extra page.
Yeah, I keep getting posters in the Marvel Unlimited. So.
Yeah, I always stop looking after the end. I just close the window and move on.
They're pretty good pinups, most of them. Well, besides Captain Asia, but, you know, it is weird.
I might
mention that one later, but anyways, Fantastic Four will be taken by Bill this week.
Yes. Reed Richards examines a massive sea creature which has washed ashore. Suspecting that it may have come from Namor's domain, he dispatches the Human Torch to check along the shoreline for any signs of danger. Torch spots an Atlantean woman rising out of the water and takes her back to the Baxter Building. Sue recognizes her as Lady Dorma, Namor's beloved. She explains that she has come to seek the Fantastic Four's aid as Atlantis has been attacked by the barbarian hordes of Atuma.
He was in love with Sue.
He was.
That cheating bastard.
We're going to get to that, Dan.
Well, you might have missed the previous issue the last time Namor was around, because Sue had said how she loved Reed. To Namor or whatever, so...
Yeah, but the being in love with Sue definitely is still a factor at this point.
Yes.
That poor girl. I feel bad for her.
Yeah. Things don't go well for Dorma overall. As Atlantis has been attacked by the barbarian hordes of Atuma, a fierce warrior who believes that he is destined to rule Atlantis... She admits that she blames herself for Atuma's advantage in battle. When Dorma expressed her fears of Namor being harmed in battle, he dismissed her, because he's still in love with Sue. That last bit was mine, but...
Yeah, okay.
Heartbroken, Dorma then showed Atuma and his minions a way to get past Namor's defenses. Regretting her decision... Dorma rushed to the surface to seek out allies to help stop the invasion, as the surface world would be at risk next. The Fantastic Four agreed to help, and with his oxy spray, Reed makes it possible for his teammates to breathe underwater for hours at a time. The spray is so potent
that, right.
That Johnny can even use his flame powers underwater.
Oh my god.
And this is where the story starts to piss me off.
Ow.
As soon as they approach Atlantis in their submarine, the Fantastic Four are attacked by Atuma's hordes and are forced to abandon ship. They battle their way through the soldiers and weapons. Meanwhile, in the kingdom, Namor and his forces fight back against the invaders. When the Fantastic Four arrive, Reed cautions his team to remain hidden, as Namor may also view them as enemies. Sue uses her invisibility powers to destroy a subsonic weapon. As Namor and Atuma battle, the Fantastic Four secretly keep Atuma's minions from interrupting, but eventually the oxy spray begins to wear off. After Namor destroys Atuma's sword, Atuma surprises him by revealing hidden disintegrator rays. But the Submariner is given an upper hand in the battle when Sue secretly turns him invisible. Namor subdues Atuma as the oxy spray fully wears off, forcing the Fantastic Four to flee to the surface before Namor can learn how to help them. In the aftermath of the battle, Atuma is banished from Atlantis. Later, Namor reveals that he knows that Dorma betrayed him, but that he forgives her out of love. Meanwhile, the Fantastic Four are stuck using Reed as a buoy at sea as they left their submarine below in the water. On the way home, Sue calls Reed darling, making him wonder if she has finally forgotten about her feelings for the Submariner. And that's the end.
Oh, dear Lord. I guess it wasn't that horrible.
It sounds worse in summary, I think, than in actually reading.
At least they try to give it some dimension instead of the standard biff, bap, pow.
It was a good story that could have been great with some better storytelling and putting stuff together. The Oxus spray shit, really. It was hilarious near the end of it, but it's really annoying, like, especially with Johnny being able to use his powers, and the fact that they could have made it half decent if they actually used a little bit of science with it, if Stan knew any science, and the fact, like, if the Oxus spray wore off even faster with Johnny, not because he was the youngest member, but because he was using his powers and the fire was eating up the Oxo spray faster, then that would have been, like, actually made sense, but...
Yeah. I think I was a lot more forgiving of the Oxo spray overall, because I just wrote it off as 60s comic bullshit.
Yeah.
Because they come up with weird super science all the time. But the thing that bugged me was Reed makes a specific point of warning Johnny that his fire powers will be hard to control because he's coated in oxygen. And then they go underwater, and it never comes up. So why did they waste any time building up that his fire powers would be tough to control?
Needed to fill that panel.
Pretty much, yeah.
I mean, let's be completely honest.
I think it was Stan trying to show that he thought this true.
Yeah, like, people are going to believe that.
Trying and failing.
But I actually really like this story. I mean, Atuma, it doesn't really come across in the synopsis, but he's Attila the Hun. He's an Atlantean Attila the Hun.
Okay.
To the point that they even draw the Atlanteans that follow him with, like, vaguely Mongolian features. So it's very clearly that he's intended to be Attila the Hun.
Well...
Like, an Atlantean version, obviously. Not really Attila, but... We haven't seen Attila since he was fighting with the Amazing Man. Or no, it wasn't the Amazing Man. It was the Human Meteor back in, like, 1945.
It wasn't horrible. You know, compared to some of the crap that they put out, you know, during that era, but...
Yeah. I also like that they had the guts to actually have the Fantastic Four never meet or get any credit for helping Namor at all.
Yeah.
I actually like that they leave and Namor's like, I did it all by myself.
Because I'm special.
I gave this one a 3. I liked it, but it could have been a little better in my opinion.
Could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, I actually went 4 because I had a ton of fun reading this one.
Yeah, I'm doing.
And this is the only time we will be getting good ratings from this podcast.
I've been doing a lot of, it could have been worse lately.
Yeah.
Because there have been some that have been so bad. Like, just so friggin' horrible.
Some of them are on this
episode. Oh, just you wait.
Okay.
They are coming very, very soon.
Speaking of, let's move on to Tales to Astonish, number 63, the A story. This one's titled The Gangster and the Giant.
That's the worst alliteration I've ever heard.
This one's written by Stan Lee, with new artist, old artist, Carl Burgos, inks by Chick Stone, Jack Kirby and Chick Stone on the cover. Sam Rosen on letters. This is a November 1964 release date. 12-page story, and I will take this one because I like to torture myself.
Ah.
Well, Wow, this one actually has a full-on synopsis.
I mean, a lot of stuff happens in that comic. It's all boring and dumb, but stuff happens.
Well, practicing their lives... Which, practicing their size, change in abilities, and exercising, Giant Man and the Wasp are interrupted by a visit from a police officer, asking them to visit the police chief. Giant Man rushes to the police station, in brackets, utilizing his size changing abilities, and the Wasp is driven there by the police. Okay, so to spend just a second on what they're talking about with the practicing the size changing abilities and exercising,
this was so bad.
Hank now has made it. He's been practicing his size changing with his mind and everything. And he can now change size in a microsecond.
Well, she must enjoy that.
Yeah. He, pretty impressive, really, but, it's very dumb for storytelling purposes.
Size doesn't matter.
I disagree. This title became more Ooh. Shit when he became Giant Man. But anyway.
Ooh. Wow.
And the downhill spiral just continued from there.
The police chief asked him to investigate a criminal named The Wrecker, who has been extorting store owners in the Brownsville area of Brooklyn. Brownsville. I can't read.
I'm just going to mention here. Hank couldn't even wait for Jan to show up before he got the briefing from the police chief. That's how much he values her.
Sounds, yeah.
What a dick.
Yeah, we're getting to peak cunt Giant Man here.
Like, he's basically a big dick.
Yes, massive.
Okay.
Huge. He is threatening to burn down the stores if the owners don't pay for protection. Resuming their civilian guises of Henry Pym and Janet Van Dyne, the two heroes go to Brownsville, where they notice that the owner of Smith's Hardware is selling his store. Keep in mind, the store owner.
Okay.
We have a character that has never been featured before.
Yeah, I wonder if this could play into... the overall plot of the story. In order to get out of the area, not wanting to bow down to the Wrecker. Seeing it as an opportunity to stop the Wrecker, Pym and Van Dyne buy the hardware store, I'm sure that was cheap, to bait a trap for the crook.
They probably used Tony's money.
Probably, but no detail given. A few days later, furious that the hardware store is still in operation, the Wrecker sends some thugs to force Henry and Janet to pay protection money. The two heroes throw out the thugs without donning their costumes. This brings praise from other store owners, but angers the Wrecker, who initiates Plan W. Using a number of underlings to keep local police busy, who cares what the plan is, by the way, the Wrecker appears at the hardware store to deal with Pym and Van Dyne personally, but he and his thugs
are
attacked.
I just want to be clear. When Ryan says, who cares what the plan is, that's not them. Choosing to not tell you what the plan is. That's just the way this is written.
Yeah, there's no... That was a shoot. There is no plan given. But he and his thugs are attacked by Giant Man and the Wasp. Man, I'm just getting flashbacks to reading this, and it's just miserable. During the battle, the Wasp is sprayed with DDT. Oh, yeah, that part made me angry. That's right.
It was done better in Ultimates.
That's funny.
Because the Wasp, because every hardware store has DDT just laying around, is literally what a character.
Actually, in the
gone.
60s, they would have.
USA, they probably did.
Because it's bug spray. It's DDT bug
it's
spray.
It's just funny how it's written in the comic.
Yeah, that's true. It was funny there. But that was actually one of the parts of the story that made the most sense.
That's saying a lot. But the Wasp being sprayed with DDT causes Giant Man to go on a rampage and easily defeat the crooks, tossing the Wrecker out for the other store owners to handle. Except when they go to start handling, the police are showing up anyway, so don't actually do anything. While Giant Man checks to see if the Wasp is okay, in brackets expressing his true feelings for her, the police arrive and unmask the Wrecker.
Yuma! Oh, baby!
The true feelings are indifference.
The police is arriving on Master Wrecker. If you want him to be Mr. Smith, the original owner of the hardware store. Dan, you just ruined the revelation.
Sorry.
Mr. Smith, the original owner of the hardware store, was the Wrecker this whole time.
Oh, was he?
Why was he disrupting business? We don't know. Why did he sell the business to other people who were willing to keep it, the business open? We don't know. How any of this plot made sense, we don't know. I'm pretty sure they didn't even know it was Mr. Smith when they were writing half of this.
It's old man Smith. And I'd have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for you and your fucking wasp.
With their mission accomplished, the two heroes return home on a flying ant.
To give a flying fuck.
Yeah, this is terrible and makes absolutely no sense.
You know what? I don't
know. Once
you
know, it made very little sense when you were reading it, and what little sense there was is completely gone once you realize it's Mr. Smith.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. What a awesome
I really
story.
Don't know which giant man is worse this week now that I reread with that synopsis.
The other one is vaguely coherent.
Story.
Don't drag
Don't
Archie
slander
down like
Archie that.
That
way, Dan.
That's just disgusting behavior.
It's just pointless.
That's
even Scooby Doo villains had motivation. Okay.
Yeah, they ran out of panels, so he just has no motivation. It's literally the second to last panel. They're like, "Oh look, it's old man Smith. I would have got away with it too if it wasn't for you damn giant mans."
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. It's
pretty obvious.
The panel even looks like the fucking Scooby Doo meme with Fred pulling the mask off.
Scooby Doo didn't actually exist then, so
no. This would be
no. This is not them stealing a Scooby-Doo plot. It's just
no.
This is the kind of stuff they're kind of making fun of with Scooby-Doo.
Yeah. Damn.
Pretty obviously gave this a one.
Oh yeah, this is a one. I would have given zero if it was possible.
Yeah, me too. This is god awful. So bad.
Five. Sorry.
For old man Smith.
Yeah, because he's the best
Gotta have
ever.
This old man solidarity. Well, anyway, join us next week where we debut a new co-host.
Anybody. Anybody but that old fucker. Yeah, good luck finding somebody straight out there to play this, you know, the straight guy. Yeah.
I was going to suggest your daughter, but yeah, that throws that out.
That totally fucks that up.
Yeah, I was going to go the same direction. But anyways, I guess now we should move on to X-Men. If we have to, I suppose.
Oh,
issue
God.
Number 8. This one is titled Unus the Untouchable.
Mm. Yeah. Well, this is a notable comic, actually. You go ahead. You do the details.
Okay. Well, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby title, of course. Chick Stone on inks is Jack's right-hand man. Kirby is on the cover. Sam Rosen's on letters. September 1964 release date. Keep in mind, I believe X-Men is bi-monthly at this point, and Avengers is too. There's 20 pages to this one, and Dan can go ahead and say whatever he was going to say.
I can say whatever I was going to say, and this comic is notable because the villain isn't green. He's purple.
The other villain color.
The other villain color. Right, they didn't even bother to mix it up a little bit.
I think in the comic there's some red, or it looks reddish, but it could be recolored as well. So,
it might be recolored. Hard to say. I just
Not sure because it is a recolored scan.
Yeah, because like that's just a really bad Kirby color cover. Oh my God, it's just a horrible Kirby cover. Right, he must have been so bored with this crap by now.
I don't know how anyone would not be bored writing this comic. When we say the other comics are better, it's because they're not actively bad. They're just boring.
Okay, the uncanny threat of Un-Us.
I've been calling him Anus for like 2 weeks now, which
pretty much
explains my opinion of him.
The uncanny threat of the U.S. Okay. Again, we're going right from the synopsis on this one, because it's actually fairly big. Holy shit.
Stuff does happen in this comic.
Okay, brace yourself. This could take a bit. Cyclops watches over the X-Men's latest training session. They always start this way, don't they?
They do. It's a trope of X-Men.
Yeah. He helps Iceman develop his powers, including making his body colder, which in turn makes him appear icier and more transparent.
That's actually a key feature.
That's a key element. Yeah, that is.
Because that's where he gets the Iceman look that everyone knows instead of looking like a snowman.
Yeah. Following the tough workouts, Cyclops gives the group the rest of the day off. Jean tries to convince Cyclops to spend the rest of the afternoon with them, but he refuses, saying he has too much work to do. From her thoughts, it becomes obvious that Jean has fallen in love with Scott. Who gives a fly? Anyway, heading for the coffee shop where they met Zelda.
Stan, that's why he used the same plot 14 times.
Yeah. So they meet Zelda, Hank, and Bobby, come across a child in danger of falling off a roof. Without any time to change into costume, Hank climbs up the side of the building and rescues the child. When he reaches the ground again, he and Bobby are attacked by the onlooking mob, who are angered that they saved the child because they were there to watch it splat on the sidewalk. Oh, no, sorry. Sorry, that's wrong. They're angered that a mutant was hiding among them.
Hank this is actually another key moment in X-Men.
Okay.
This is the start of mutants being discriminated against. Yeah. Before that, the public never really cared.
Yeah, Hank and Bobby escape and head back to the mansion. Infuriated, Hank tells Scott that he's quitting the X-Men. Scott doesn't know what to do, so he contacts Professor Xavier. Professor Xavier tells him that he cannot do anything about it and continues on his quest to find Lucifer.
Fuck off, Stan.
But he's got to find Lucifer. Because Lucifer is obviously important. Yeah.
But he should not be.
Oh, okay.
We'll get to that next issue.
Oh, will we? Because that's what we want to do.
God is... Lucifer is a sore spot amongst X-Men fans.
Oh, I hate that you said that. It's an X-Men I have to read.
Right, well, hey, you're the one who tortures yourself. You go right ahead. A week later, Hank has established himself as a pro wrestler named Da Beast. His latest opponent is Enos, the Untouchable. Hank tries to attack Unus, but every time he attempts to strike the man, he's stopped by an invisible force field. Hank suddenly recognizes Mastermind in the audience, then realizes that the two men somehow know each other. There could be a Mastermind at work here. After the fight, Mastermind heads into Unus' locker room. Unus inquires whether he can join the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants yet. Mastermind informs him that due to the failures of Namor and Blob recently, Unus must prove his loyalty before receiving membership.
Wild Mastermind holds his bag shut, just in case Unus takes a dump in it.
I don't know why it's so hard to get into the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, to be honest, but here
he
we are.
He informs Unus that he must find or even defeat one of the X-Men. Unus has no idea how to find the X-Men, so he goes for a walk. He sees a bank robbery and thinks he could put the money to better use, and robs the robbers. That's kind of funny. The X-Men are nearby and assume Unus is the bank robber and confront him. The four X-Men are unable to figure out how to fight a man who can't be touched. Unus grabs Angel, who tries to fly off. Unus holds on to him, knowing the X-Men are not killers. Angel eventually sets Unus down on a nearby rooftop. Okay. Sure. There's a point to the story, right?
It looked more like a water tower or something that he was dropped on or something like that. It was some kind of tower, if any.
So, the X-Men return to the mansion to plot strategy and find Beast in the lab, working on a strange device. I thought Beast quit.
He did.
Beast informs them that the device is designed to increase Unus's powers. The X-Men think Beast is joined with Magneto and attack him. Beast tries to explain his plan, but the others won't listen. What the fuck? Seriously? Really?
When we said this was good, it's relative.
It's not good. It's stupid.
Oh, yes, but it's not as terrible as the Giant Man or the Daredevil. Or the other Giant Man.
This is arguably even better than Avengers.
I still have...
I liked Avengers a little more, but it's close.
I still have a paragraph to go. Don't get your hopes up. So he grabs his device and jumps out the window. At the gym, Beast uses a device on Unus, increasing his powers. The X-Men arrive too late. At first, Unus is very pleased with his powers, but quickly realizes he can no longer control them. He learns that he can't touch anything, not even his cigarettes or food. The X-Men find him in a restaurant trying to grab food because he is starving, but his power thwarts him. Beast makes a deal with Unus to reverse the device's effects as long as it does not join the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. Seriously?
Yes, seriously.
I also wanted this device to use on Dan. No.
Hey!
No food or cigarettes for you.
We can increase Dan's power. The snark would be overwhelming.
It would be. That's right. Bastards. Unus agrees and returns to his wrestling career after being treated, and Beast returns to the X-Men. And we've come across the key word that made you both decide you like this more than usual. Wrestling.
Oh, no, this was terrible.
You thought that would slip by without me noticing it. Yeah, okay.
This one was bad enough that I suggested we pass it off to you because I didn't want to do it.
Okay, well, you know what? It's, again, it could have been worse.
Yes.
But it's, this is one of those stories, and there haven't been a lot of them recently, not a lot, but there's been one or two where it's just wasted potential. It's a great idea that they did absolutely nothing with.
This one barely passed with a three from me, but, like, barely, and it's... there's some good aspects of this, I think. And this was also the help that this was relatively easy to read for an X-Men comic.
You say that, but I gave it a 2 because I found it one of the most painfully boring things I've read.
Well, it's just...
I struggled so hard with it.
It's a pointless story. It's a great idea, but they do nothing with it. This whole idea of being, you know, being unable to touch somebody.
Unus sucks, but everything else around it is fine.
I don't know.
The character stuff in this issue I like. I actually like Beast getting angry and leaving the team and stuff.
Yeah, that could have been good. Part of the problem was, and this is an ongoing problem, because I've read several other stories with Unus. No one is able to use that power. There hasn't been a writer up to the point I am that's figured out how to do something interesting with a guy that can't be hit or touched.
Well, can we just, you know, talk about the elephant in the room? They come, Beast is in the lab working on a device. They find out what the device is, and instead of saying, well, what do you plan to do with it, friend? They go, oh, you're not a friend anymore. We're going to try and beat you up. Really? Really?
Well, okay, that's a little bit the fault of the...
that's just poor writing.
Synopsis. Because in the actual comic, they find Beast using, when Scott's using Cerebro, he finds Beast in, like, basically the same room as the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, because the Brotherhood are all around to try to recruit Unus, and Cyclops doesn't know about Unus, so he thinks that it's Beast joining the Brotherhood.
Okay.
I mean, it's not great, but they do actually provide an explanation for that.
Okay. So, you're saying these synopsises are fallible?
Yes.
Gosh darn. I feel...
Betrayed?
I'm crushed.
Anyway, I can't believe we've read 8 issues of X-Men already.
Feels like so much more.
It does.
Not because a lot has happened or been good, but because I feel like I've wasted years of my life on that title.
It's a complete waste of time.
Technically, you have.
It's such a, again, wasted potential.
Yeah, but I'm not counting stuff when it was actually good.
But anyways, I think it's time we move on to...
please. Rapidly.
To the next comic of this week, and
it's the next story. Like
one that will forever remain in our hearts and minds. This is Daredevil issue number 5, titled The Mysterious Masked Matador.
Can I get an operation or something for that?
Uh-huh.
It's like a malignant tumor.
Yes.
Not a tumor.
This one's written by Stan Lee, with new series artist Wallace Wood.
Yeah.
Wally Wood.
We fucking upgraded to Wally Wood.
Yeah,
the man who hates background.
Cover
Although he did do one of my favorite panels. The scene where Matador busts into the office and Daredevil's sitting behind a desk in like the dark room. That's actually a great panel. But the whole rest of this comic, the art is terrible.
The cover art's done by Jack Kirby, so you don't know what you're getting on the inside. Sam Rosenzahn letters, October 1964 release. I believe Daredevil's also bi-monthly at this point because they only have the printing for 8 titles a month or whatever.
I think Daredevil and Avengers actually hold the same slot.
Yeah, Daredevil and Avengers are in the same month, and X-Men is the opposite month. I think X-Men might be with... Is Sergeant Fury monthly now? I think it went
monthly.
Sergeant Fury's monthly.
It's not restricted by DC limiting how many superhero books they can produce.
And this is a 20-page story, and I shall take this beauty of a comic. And strap in, folks, because this got a whole whopping paragraph. I see somebody cared to put some time into this one.
clearly not, because actually stuff happens in it. It's the same stuff 3 times, but stuff happens.
We actually might have to add detail to this, but I'm going to read what they and then what? then we'll see. Eleganto is a talented former Spanish matador that was so cruel to the bulls that the audience began to despise and boo him. During his final bullfight, the crowd distracted them, and he was gored horribly by the bull.
Crowd distracted him by cheering for the bull.
Yeah. After recovery, he turned to being an evil thief using his bullfighting skills and sword. In their first public encounter, the matador defeats... How is the synopsis making the comic worse than it already was?
Yeah.
The matador defeats Daredevil, whose super senses are confused by fighting among a crowd of people in an enclosed room. In a rematch, Daredevil handily defeats Eleganto with his superior skill and strength. The matador flees during the second battle and is exposed as a coward. Daredevil knocks him out and hands him over to the police. Wow.
You know?
Yes.
That is a synopsis that's completely worthy of the amount of attention I want to pay to this comic.
Yeah, it's not really a good synopsis, but at the same time, it covers enough that it's not... I don't know. It leaves a lot out at the same time.
That stuff matters, though. There's like 10 pages of fucking Matt.
Well, it leaves
Karen
out how...
going to an art show.
So, okay, I'm going to put a few fins out there. We have Matt boohooing because Foggy wants to propose, but has a ring and is thinking about proposing to Karen, but doesn't know he's going to do it and decides.
Oh, yeah, this is the one where Foggy wants to propose to Karen after knowing her for like 3 weeks and her working for him.
Yes.
Because in the 60s, dating culture and work culture were very healthy for women.
But he doesn't end up doing it. Yet. Then it leaves out how Matt's pulled the press in to say that Daredevil and the Matador are the same person after Matador beat Daredevil at the party that they went to, which Matt took Karen to because Foggy was busy. And it's the whole thing. So it left out that, and then like Karen and Foggy getting on Matt about why the hell did you say anything? Blah, blah, blah.
But, okay, yeah. Actually, that's a good thing to bring up, because I like the way they handled that. Instead of the usual scenario where the secret identity does something dickish towards their superhero identity to maintain cover, and in this case, to lure the Matador out. And then normally in comics, you'd have the superhero be like, "Oh, I told him to do that, so he's not really a bad guy." And in this one, Matt's just like, "Oh, sorry guys, I fucked up. Even I can get stuff wrong sometimes." So he just ate the loss on the fact that he was wrong about Daredevil and Matador.
Yeah. There is literally a note here that says, "Contrary to long-running rumors, neither Jack Kirby nor Vincent Coletta touched this cover. It was penciled and inked by Wally Wood." So, the site we were using, apparently wrong on that note, but it might have been given the wrong credit somewhere, so.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And Stan's totally not known for putting the wrong credits in these things.
Yeah. Totally not. That's about all
yeah,
the notes.
Yeah, that's not a Kirby. Those aren't Kirby faces.
No, they're not. They're terrible Wally Wood faces. Wally Wood sucks, by the way. I'm just saying. The art took a big dive in this issue. I don't know why this upgrade was seen as necessary, but
Wally Wood has exactly one contribution to this comic. And that is the death of the yellow costume. Wally Wood is the one who designed the classic Daredevil look that we're still using today.
Well, there's even a note early in the comic that says, oh, Wally Wood, we've got Wally Wood here, and he's actually changed a few fins on Daredevil's costume. He did a few little changes before they do the big costume change.
Yeah, he wasn't able to... I think he picked this one up in the middle, so he wasn't able to get the big costume change in, but it's only an issue or two before he has the red costume that everyone knows.
Yeah, it's two more. We have next issue... And then I think they tease it at the end of next issue, and then issue 7's when he fully debuts it, I believe.
Yeah, issue 7 sounds right for when the red costume comes in.
Because he has 6 issues with the yellow costume, I believe. But yeah.
Yeah, it's Fellowship of Fear next, and then, yep, he gets the red costume for 7.
This really wasn't that good of a comic. I gave it a 2.
I also gave it a 2. This was terrible. But the story was coherent, so
the story was coherent,
it earned out of 1. There was nothing deeply offensive, and it was a coherent story.
The Matador the Matador was slightly offensive, but it doesn't come off across as offensive for how they write it, surprisingly enough.
There's actually no racist Spanish stereotypes in this.
No, it's
I thought it was a load of bull.
It looks like it's going to be more racist than it was.
Yeah. I did.
Matador was surprisingly inoffensive while still being really stupid.
Don't hate Matador because it's a racist villain. I just hate Matador because he's a terrible villain.
Yeah. Although he did whoop Daredevil's ass a couple times here.
Twice. So. How did Daredevil lose to this chump twice?
Yeah. That's a little embarrassing, but oh well. That's about all I have to say, I think, for this one. The pinup was one of the better parts of this. And but anyways.
Are you sure you don't have other stuff to talk about? Because the longer we put off the next one, the better.
Yeah, but, I mean, I guess we might as well push through it. And Tales to Astonish is number 64, the A story. Notice how I am not too excited to talk about this one. One of Two Mistrikes is the title of this one. Technically, this has a lower average. That might be because of me.
I think it is because of you, because it was higher rated when I rated it.
I think it is literally because of me, because I think it was at 2.13 or something, slightly higher.
Yeah, I think it was 2.12, and the other one was 2.10 when I rated them. Not when I rated them, but when I checked for my rating.
Okay.
This one is apparently written by Leon Lazarus, which Bill had mentioned at one point.
Yeah, Leon this is Leon Lazarus's only superhero credit. He has been pumping out a variety of kid-themed Western comics. I think he's done a bunch of Two Gun Kid.
Oh, Kid
and
Cult?
I don't think he spoiled Kid Cult. He was on,
that's
like, Rawhide Kid. Yeah, Kid Cult's the good one. They didn't let him touch that one. But it was mostly Two Gun Kid and Rawhide Kid, I think.
Oh, nice. Art by Carl Burgers, of course. Paul Reinman's on inks, apparently. Poor guy. I like Reinman. Jack Kirby and Vincent Clutter on the cover. Sam Rosen's on letters. December 1964 release, Merry Christmas. Oh, wow. What a gift.
Oh, no, he did do some Kid Cult, too.
Oh, nice. And then this was a 12-page story. And this one's for Bill.
Just give me a second to go back a couple pages because I was looking up Leon Lazarus credits. Here we go. Hank Pym is working on a project involving his aunts. He calls Janet over to bring him a box of tubes, which she accidentally drops. Pym gets angry with Janet, causing her to get upset, thinking she means nothing to him, and runs to her room. While in her room, Janet Van Dyne thinks about how she feels foolish for being in love with a man whom she feels will never return the affection. And
you are.
Yes, she's an idiot. And decides to leave her partner for good. The best decision Jan ever makes, and it's really too bad that she takes it back with indecision. She packs away her clothes in a suitcase and boards a plane to an undisclosed location, most likely because Leon didn't think of what that location was, leaving a note behind for Hank to read. While she's on the plane, Hank figures out a way to work around Jan's error and goes to look for Jan around the house to celebrate, feeling guilty over the way he treated her. He finds the note on the desk and goes ballistic, feeling that he's the one to blame for losing the one precious thing I hold dear in life. Yes, Hank, you are. During his moment of anger, he uncontrollably becomes giant, breaking various pieces of his home, before finally passing out on the floor back to his normal size. Meanwhile, Janet's plane gets taken into a fountain of bubbles by Atuma. Atuma is still embarrassed over the defeat that was handed to him by the Submariner.
Earlier this episode.
Yes, and decides to redeem his honor by attacking the plane and planning on taking a human from it to study. The plane is taken to a newly created island next to the bubble fountain. Janet is chosen by Atuma to be the person for his other underwater enemies to study. Janet frantically eats the crumbs from a previous reducing capsule in her pocketbook, which allows her to send a message to Hank from an aunt to come and rescue her. Hank receives the message and frantically hurries out to chase Atuma and begins attacking Atuma's various henchmen. Hank then rescues Janet from a paralyzing beam and gives her her old costume, which she puts on. Hank then angrily tells Atuma that he cannot treat his gal that way, revealing his feelings for Janet for the first time since the last issue. They both attack Atuma. Janet and Hank both begin to beat Atuma and his men, with Janet musing to herself that she enjoys fighting at Hank's side again. While Hank is rescuing Janet from another paralyzing ray shot, Atuma turns on his emergency flood control tank, causing everything around Hank and Jan to flood. Jan once again confesses her love for Hank, thinking that it's all over, but Hank finds an air bubble for the both of them to breathe in. Atuma does not realize this and turns off the chamber, causing Hank and Janet to attack him once more. Atuma flees. Jan and Hank also flee in their own ship, holding hands and reconciling with each other as Hank also apologizes. They tell each other how much they missed each other as the story ends, leaving everyone else that was on that fucking plane to die on the island.
Mm-hmm. True heroes.
Yeah. Riveting. I'm glued to the screen for this.
I despise this comic with everything that I hold. Oh, this is so fucking bad. I'm going on the record, and I'm saying it again. I'm actually going to say it fully this time. This is my least favorite comic that we've read so far. I don't fucking care. This is worse than the last one. You reading that synopsis again, me thinking back on actually reading that bitch, and how long it took me to read it because of how miserable I was from the fucking first, the get-go. Fuck this comic. It can burn in hell.
It's not exactly groundbreaking.
No. I think it's a little better than the other really one, because this story at least made some degree of sense.
Nah, I'll take the nonsense skull. They ruined Atuma here, too, in the second
appearance. Oh, yes. Atuma is completely ruined after this, and I never take him serious again.
This is the inspiration for the title of this episode.
Yeah, which I still think is a great title.
Well, I don't know. I think there was trouble bubbling up at some point in the story, but it's just lame.
Yeah.
Like, it's Brian, stop hiding your face.
Oh, I don't want to be seen with you.
No, it's just pointless. It's just pointless. Like,
this was so fucking bad. This took me like 45 minutes to read 12 pages or something like that.
Well, they've gotten to a point where they've run out of ideas. And they're just sort of regurgitating whatever they had for breakfast and saying, this, oh, here's your story.
This series has gone so far down that Stan didn't even write this one himself.
Yeah, he just called the guy off the Western order.
He literally got a lackey to fucking write this so he could, like, relax for a day or something.
This is the end of their indifference arc on the Western Order. They will next begin the try wacky shit and see if they can save the comic that way arc.
Yeah.
And stay tuned for the next issue. We get a note at the end of this comic as the new Giant Man will debut.
Oh, really?
The start of the wacky shit.
Okay.
Yeah, so can't wait for that one. By the way, folks, we have only 5 issues left of Giant Man, and we will be counting them down.
Oh, yes.
Just darn.
And 2 of them are 2-parters.
Oh, God.
The fuck six. Oh, that's not good.
Okay. Let's
move on.
Scramble away from that.
Let's move on to Avengers. I'm calling a counselor after this. No, Avengers number 10. This one's titled The Avengers Breakup. This one's written by Stan Lee. He got a nice day off from taking a break from Giant Man. So hopefully he's come renewed for... Actually, this is a September release date, so this is far back, so that's not related at all, unfortunately. Or else this might have been better. Art by Don Heck. Inks by Dick Geyers. Hell of a team. Art was definitely good in this issue. And, which...
That's been what's been carrying Avengers.
Yes, it has.
Because the stories have not been good.
Don Heck and Dick Geyers, both very underappreciated in terms of contributors in this time frame, and we continue to shout them out. Jack Kirby, Chick Stone on the cover, which is why it's worse than the interiors. Sam Rosen is on letters. September 1964 release date, like I already said. And it's a 20-page story, and Dan, I can't wait to see your reactions to this.
Well, I'm a little confused. I can't figure out who the bad guy is on the cover. I mean, it's confusing. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Synopsis for the Avengers breakup.
Obviously, it's the blonde guy doing the river dance.
Yeah, the blonde guy doing the river dance.
Cultural appropriation is a heel move.
Right. Oh, it's just a really a pedestrian cover. I don't think they've really learned their lesson about how do you sell comics. Well,
they titled this one right. The Avengers Break Up. That's a pull right there. That was the smartest part about this comic.
If they hadn't done the same thing with Fantastic Four and X-Men so far.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just more of the same. Anyway, let's go through the synopsis because it's fairly big, actually, so brace yourselves. Immortus appears before the Masters of Evil, wanting to ally himself with them. At first, Zemo is distrusting and offended that Immortus thinks himself superior to them. Zemo sends Executioner to battle Immortus, but Immortus sends Paul Bunyan in his stead to fight. Right. After a quick skirmish, they agree to unite on one condition, to destroy the Avengers. What the fuck have you guys given me here?
And this is what I was hoping for.
Yeah. He places a newspaper ad offering superpowers to civilians. Seeking memberships in the Avengers, Rick Jones falls for the trap. Captain America finds the ad and goes to the location. Immortus tells Captain America that one of the other Avengers sent Rick here. Oh, a little intrigued. Ooh. Cap goes back to HQ to find the traitor and takes them all back to Immortus. Immortus pits each... what?
I'm pretty sure you're reading this right.
Okay. Immortus pits each Avenger to a character picked out of time that is similar to them. Giant Man is first, and his opponent is a biblical Goliath.
Yep.
This is really stupid.
I believe they're supposed to be 12 feet, both of them.
Okay, at first, Goliath easily outmatches Giant Man in terms of strength. But Giant Man uses intelligence. What? Yeah, it's the first time he got a roll since he started. He shrinks to the size of an ant, and using himself as the ball, hits Goliath in the forehead, defeating him much as David did before. So he doesn't use intelligence at all.
He uses a sling that he somehow fires himself out of, well, he's ant-sized, to hit Goliath.
Yeah, the Giant Man section makes no sense at all, because there's that, and then there's also just him, like, we literally saw, we've seen Giant Man become up to 50 feet, and he could have just become bigger than him, too, possibly. I mean, he loses strength, but if you take advantage of your time, I don't know. It just, it's all stupid. It's all dumb.
I think they've got, I think this Avengers is a little
stupid,
wonky on where it fits into the order.
Okay. Yeah,
because the size cap becomes more of a thing with the all new Giant Man that's coming.
Well, this Avengers—that's why I pointed it out, because this is
it's the old costume, and he can still size change to small.
This was released in September, and the other two Giant Mans we read today were November and December.
Yeah. Well, can I make a point?
This sucks.
The more you guys digress, the longer it's going to take to get through this. just sharing that with you.
I'm just playing the role of Dan today.
Oh, I noticed that. Wow. What's that all about? Anyway.
Someone has to play heel.
Ooh. Iron Man is next. He fights the wizard Merlin. Merlin traps Iron Man in a cage of tempered steel, because Merlin would know what the fuck tempered steel was, leading Iron Man to remark that if he wins the battle, he'll never complain about enemies such as the Mandarin or Hawkeye ever again. Iron Man easily breaks free and dodges Merlin's thunderbolts. He uses a device that produces flashing lights and irritating sounds, which disorients the much older Merlin, causing him to faint.
Clever. So the Giant Man battle was also way longer than any of these other battles.
So
it was like 2 pages to 1 for everyone else.
Immortus then sends out Hercules to battle the mighty Thor. Surprisingly, the fight is evenly matched, until Hercules breaks a standstill grappling with Thor. Thor tries to imbalance Hercules and falls out a window. Thor catches him, and Hercules yields to the thunder god, and we finally have our first gay scene in a comic. But no?
That's coming up in Thor Annual, where he meets proper Hercules.
No, I was going to say, so it's not what he means by Hercules yields to the thunder god. I'm just wondering. It's not exactly clear. Okay.
Hercules is the bottom?
Uh-huh. Immortus.
You know, I can see that for real Hercules.
Yep.
Immortus. Well, he is bisexual in canon.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go. Immortus, not wanting to take any more chances, grabs Captain America and sends him back in time to save Rick. Okay.
Yes. This is not explained any better in the actual comic. That is not a failure of the synopsis.
You're making me hate this comic more of the synopsis.
I didn't actually realize where Cap was until he came back.
And the Cap came back the very next day. Cap came back because he thought he was an Avenger. And the Cap came back. The other Avengers are attacked by the Masters of Evil while they are weak. Why are they weakened?
Because they fought these incredibly dangerous historical features. And that's me doing a lot of work.
Oh, the Avengers, yes.
Making this better.
All right. Iron Man is attacked by Executioner. Giant Man is shrunk down to normal size and left in a confused state by the Enchantress. Thor gets shot by a gun, which turns flesh into stone. Okay, so
by CMO.
So Thor gets stoned. As the battle ensues, the Wasp
aids... It was 420.
The Wasp aids Giant Man by trying to confuse Enchantress. Iron Man trades blows with the Executioner. And Thor starts getting turned on with, turned in to solid stone.
He's still thinking about fake Herc.
That Herc thing, yeah. Helpless. Okay, with Iron Man's repulsors destroyed, giant man normal-sized, and Wasp unable to confuse the Enchantress and Thor helpless, Baron Zemo gloats and prolongs his final shot to Thor, wanting to savor the moment. A voice, a familiar
Thor
voice...
Thor only got caught because he was prolonging the final shot to Herc.
A familiar voice protests, and a spinning shield destroys Zemo's gun. Captain America aids fellow Avenger Iron Man against the Executioner. As Executioner is down by Cap's shield, Wasp distracts the Enchantress enough that her spell wears off, returning Giant Man to his giant size, which makes Wasp very happy. And, you know, Hercules very jealous. Thor yells, "Avengers assemble!" after breaking free of his rock imprisonment. And at the last instant, Enchantress sends herself, Zemo, and the Executioner back in time, to a time before they met Immortus.
Yep, that's how this story.
And they retained memory of it, so when Immortus contacted them the second time, they just didn't pick up.
Yeah. Okay, there's a couple of notes here, one of which is actually, I think personally, fairly important.
This the identity of Herc, I assume.
This is the first comic to ever show that Captain America's shield can withstand a blow from Mew Mew. Right?
Yeah,
that's actually important.
Yeah, I can see that.
Right. Oh, and although this is the first appearance of Immortus, he's later revealed to be yet another future version of Ramatut in Kang.
Fuck off.
God damn it, I didn't know that.
Fuck's sakes.
Like, that's important.
That actually, I mean, narratively, yes, but yeah, fuck, it's bad.
You know what, I actually did know that, and I forgot until Dan said that and from the note.
I think I did know it too, and just also forgot.
They don't reference it much, I don't think. He's very seldom used.
Because he's awful.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I thought both those things were actually important.
Okay, there is one more actual important fact about this comic, too.
What the fact?
Rick Jones almost becoming an Avenger.
Oh, no, they decide to make him an Avenger at the end.
Oh, that's good of them.
But that wasn't the one I was going to bring up, because fuck Rick Jones. They should have left him in the past.
Wow. Cold.
You haven't read Captain Marvel yet, or the time when he's doing double duty as a professional sidekick to both Avengers and Hulk at the same time.
It's okay. I actually am turning on Rick Jones already. He pissed me off in this issue.
Yeah, but no, the actual important thing is for anyone that heard the name Hercules and figured this was the first appearance of the Marvel character of the same name.
Yeah.
The actual Greek god. It's not. It's so much worse. This Hercules is the Space Phantom.
Okay.
From Avengers 2.
Oh.
The dreaded Avengers 2.
Yeah, okay.
And no explanation is given for the other historic figures, but the best explanation I have is that they are also other Space Phantoms. Since we know it's a race. But they're never explained in any way. Except that it's acknowledged that they're not actually the historic figures in question.
They probably just knew that they needed to retcon out the Hercules thing at one point. Mm.
Yeah, the Space Phantom thing is explained when they actually make the character Hercules. And that's when they decide that none of the historical figures were legit, but they only provided an explanation for Hercules.
Yeah, they also retcon out the fact that Thor is the one who says Avengers assemble first. By, you know, going back in time and saying it never happened.
Yeah. I think Avengers Assemble has been used by this point.
Right? This is the first time ever the catchphrase Avengers Assemble is said.
Oh, okay. Just misremembering.
Yeah. According to this,
That's crazy.
I believe it. That
I feel like I've read it in every issue.
It gets used a lot in the future, so I'm probably just thinking of that.
I'm probably just thinking in my head, I guess, so.
Yeah, but like I say, it's not said by Captain America, so...
You know, I don't think Cap uses it very much, other than during the Kooky Quartet phase.
Oh, once all the fangirls started reading it.
You make fun, but Captain America's the best part of this fucking comic.
Yeah. Although I didn't miss him when he was sent to the past, and I legit didn't realize he was gone until he came back.
Captain America buries the other Avengers in this fucking thing.
This story... Anyway... Two ratings.
I think it's pretty clear Thor's the leader here.
Thor is the one they want to be the main character at this point.
He is the main character. Get off his back. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Anyway.
Fanboys.
This was terrible and 2 stars.
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad I gave it 2 stars.
Okay. I didn't think it was that bad.
It's not. It's actually not as bad reading it.
It's different.
The stretch where the Avengers are fighting the other fuckers is awful. Everything else is pretty decent, besides Rick Jones stuff, too, is kind of stupid.
I hated the Rick Jones stuff. I hated that they didn't even use the real villains for most of this. They used one-off historical figures that, for the most part, were human and shouldn't be able to hold up against the actual superheroes they were fighting. Although, Hercules gets a pass because, I mean, the logic there is good enough that they reused it in Thor Annual, where, you know, what if a god from one pantheon fought another one? But I hated that. The time travel stuff made no sense.
No. No, it doesn't.
Oh, the time travel shit at the end is bullshit.
Not just there, but just when they randomly send her, Captain America back in time. That might have been worse for me because I was aware that he was... Yeah, that one might have been worse for me because I was aware of the fact that he wasn't actually pulling these other figures out of time.
He rules over Limbo, but really he rules over time because he's pulling and sending people through different points. And like, what? It's dumb.
Yeah, they don't know what they want to do with Immortus.
No, when he's interacting with the Masters of Evil, like, he's fine, but, like, when he's actually displaying his powers and shit, it's dumb. Dumb, dumb, dumb. But, both gave it 2 stars.
And then it also might have suffered a little bit more because it came after I had read 2 Giant-Mans, a Daredevil, an episode of X-Men that I didn't like. And so I was just already in a bad mood coming into this one.
I like the X-Men more than you, so I had that at least. But yeah, pretty shit week, really. next week should be...
better?
Quite a bit better.
We're definitely going to have a higher quality of story.
Yeah. We may have a shit end, but besides that, it should be pretty good. We'll talk about what we're going to cover now, as X-Men will start us off with that X-Men story that Bill teases with. Apparently,
the story's not actually bad, it's just the revelation that's made in the story that's bad.
The Avengers are apparently on the issue, so we'll see what that's about next week. Then we move on to Tales of Suspense number 61, the A story, so the Iron Man story, which has the death of Tony Stark. I'm sure that's legit.
Oh, goddamn time.
That's the title you like, didn't
it? I like that. I like that story, yeah.
Tales of Suspense number 62, A story, Iron Man story again, the origin of the Mandarin.
That's actually a good one, too.
That should excite Dan. Avengers number 11, a feature in Spider-Man. That's all I'm going to say about that one. Dan almost made it through without Spider-Man for next week.
Wait, I think Spidey actually is in that one.
Oh, God. No more Spider-Man, please.
Tales of Suspense number 61, B story. So the Captain America story. In comes the sumo character.
So you thought those Giant Man stories we covered this week were poorly rated?
Mm-hmm.
This one's rated lower.
Well, I mean, friggin' Captain America and the pinup for Avengers was friggin' colored like he was Asian. So I guess he's gonna go across and battle soon. This is gonna be dumb.
This is gonna be hard.
He does not go to Japan, if you're wondering. They just don't know how to tell Asian cultures apart.
Yeah, I'm reading the little synopsis on the site now, and he heads to Vietnam, for anybody wondering.
Yeah, it's a Vietnamese sumo wrestler.
Nice, that's nice. Okay. Anyway, it says the suspense number 62 will end the week off the B story, another Captain America story, two in a row. How lucky. Which has a breakout in block 10. So I have no clue what that's about, but we'll find it next week.
Captain America fights a whole bunch of dudes.
Ah, nice. Classic.
As opposed to...
Two of the three Captain America stories we've already mentioned were also Captain America fights a whole bunch of dudes.
Has Dan witnessed the Captain America story? He missed the last one.
Darn.
Were you here for the first one?
Can we recover
it right
now? Yeah,
he was here for the first one.
Right. Whatever.
Captain America's been pretty bad.
Yeah.
Captain America is terrible until he goes back to World War II.
He's been
which
great
fortunately
defenders.
Happens two comics after we end the next issue.
Thank God.
Not two Captain America comics, just two comics. This is the last present day Captain America story until they do the flashbacks.
Okay. Good. Well, that's next week's episode. We might have a bonus episode coming at some point. It's probably not going to be this month at this point, but it's the next one is supposed to be on the Sharknado franchise, but we'll see. We might switch it to the video game one, depending on availabilities and stuff.
Okay.
Well, it depends. I still got to finish the franchise, and Bill got to decide what they're doing. So.
Oh, I know what I'm doing. I'm not watching the Sharknado movies
again. Fair enough. Okay, why then not? That's more about me finishing them and make sure we're all available then.
That's right.
Because I didn't terribly like them the first time I watched them.
So.
This is all just an object lesson for Ryan.
Where
I get to be Dan for the Sharknado episode and have either not watched it or have watched it years ago and not really remember it.
What, flying sharks? How can you not love it?
It's too high budget and it's trying too hard to be terrible.
We're wasting our material. But anyway.
Yeah, we are wasting our material. Let's save this for the podcast.
Whenever the fuck it comes out. But anyway, guys,
we'll
see you all in the next episode. If you're watching this on YouTube, please like, subscribe, comment, share if you'd like to. We're also available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And of course, if you're on Spotify, let us know what your favorite in the poll, what your favorite comic we covered was, and tell us why it was.
It's not as shit as the other ones.
And tell us why it was for our boy the Matador. But anyways, we will
just
see
for
all
that,
this.
I'm going to leave you with this parting thought. The second Captain America is also rated worse than either of those giant mans.
Next week's ending will be fun. Anyway, guys, we
next
will see you all
Dan
in the next.
Dan will be sick.
Probably.
I thought you were reaching for the disconnect button. I thought
really
you were like, next week Dan is going to be sick. Just gone.
Yeah, Dan will be able to join you.
Peace out, everybody.
Have a good one.